Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 55, The Morning After, back from a long holiday break. Feels good to be back in studio. I'm your host, Jesse Kiefer. Sitting across from me in the co-host chair, a dear friend of The Morning After, Elizabeth Chubbuck, Associate Director of Wholesale for Murray's Cheese. She is here as my moral support, my co-host. Our love, Jen Tulloch, is away in Nashville on holiday with her family. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We just want to tell everyone that not only is Elizabeth the associate director of wholesale for Murray's Cheese, she's also a bucking erotic photo hunt professional.
I mean, a girl's got to have a hobby.
Exactly. Dive bars and erotic photo hunt. I mean, it's a good way to spend your dollars.
And to blow off some steam after rolling around big wheels of cheese all week.
Is there a correlation between erotic photo hunt and cheese?
You can draw the lines wherever you want to.
I guess those photos are pretty gruesome, so.
I'd say the wheels of cheese are a little bit nicer to look at on a day-to-day basis.
Anyway, in studio today, Kelly Farwell. I knew I was going to do that.
Don't worry.
She is here. She is embarking on an amazing endeavor. It's called The Water Table, and you may say, The Water Table, what is that? Well, it's a restaurant on a boat, not to be confused with the song, I'm on a Boat.
That's true. It's a separate thing altogether.
Welcome to the studio. I can't wait to talk to you about this. And just, I can't believe that I haven't heard about anybody doing this yet. And well, I hope that all this press doesn't actually make someone else do it.
Well, I was worried about that too, and just talking about it initially, but after really thinking it out, there would have to be a lot of elements coming together. It's not something you can just go do. Like, it's a long process, even just to get your license, let alone you're dealing with the Coast Guard, you have to get the right boat, you have to get the right permits, and it's not, even if you're a restaurateur, like, you would really have to segue into a different branch of that to get something like that going.
So they'd be talking, like, years before they could get up on this.
It's possible, unless they just hired a captain, but I don't know of any captains that work outside of the transportation industry, mm-hmm. whereas, like, I have all of this restaurant background.
Sure.
So it's sort of like all of the elements in one, whereas most captains out there to drive the boat, and that's mm-hmm. pretty much it. They're not really involved in what goes on outside of the wheelhouse, as long as everybody stays.
It seems like
control.
Such a specific environment and such a specific project that you yeah. need somebody who has experience on both sides.
Correct. I think
of
so.
Of the line.
Yeah.
Well, speaking,
counting on that.
Yeah. Speaking of someone who is an all-in-one amazing person, Jen Tulloch is on the line here to deliver our front of house segment this week.
Hi, you guys.
Hey, Jen.
It's front of house. It's a front of house.
And this
what
is
a delightful jingle.
I don't know who made that. We miss you.
I don't know. Surely someone I could never afford. Hello, Ms. Chubbuck. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. I would like to know about this erotic photo hunt.
Well, we can do a replay once you're back in the Big Apple.
I mean, all it takes is some Miller High Life and whiskey and Lucy's on Avenue A. I'm sure you've been.
Great place to be.
Well, so we are, Jen, we're in part two of a three-part series called Blood, Sweat, and Tears for Front of
yeah.
House. Gory, gruesome stories of blunder as our exploits of members of the front of house. And our story today actually comes from Kelly. Thank yeah. you for this story. It's
it was
incredible.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Kelly. Now, I'm actually here in Nashville as the traveling companion of the Baroness.
I had no idea.
Baroness Olivier. She was here for the Queen's Julep Garden Tea Party and asked me to accompany her as she's not walking so well these days. So I actually don't feel that I'm qualified to read such an intense story, so I've actually invited her over to my parents' house to read it if you'll have her.
Has Mary Gay made her some snacks and some tea?
You know what, Mary Gay, sweetheart Mary Gay made her an omelet. It had a little cheese in it. I don't know if it's a Gouda or a feta, but it's not. It's definitely not cheddar, I can tell you that much.
Was it sweet or was it briny?
It's got sort of a neon orange color to it. So, yes, she did make the Baroness some omelets, and we did some grits, and we did some toast, and now we're having some mimosas.
Well, I can't wait to hear from the Baroness on how she's digesting all of that.
She hasn't said much. She's shaking a bit. I don't know if that's the age or the terror.
Well, let's hear from her. I'm sick of hearing you.
Okay, well, she's here with me now. She says she's ready to go if you're ready to receive her.
I've never been more ready to receive her.
All right. Dame? As I was putting an order into the micros for a rambunctious six-top of date tables at Restaurant X, one of the floor managers came rushing over to my side with an urgent gig. "We need you in the men's room," he said in a hushed voice in my ear. Not knowing what this could possibly be about, I responded, "Are you sure it's me you need?" "Yes," he said, "it's you." Having recently studied to get my EMT license, I was becoming used to being pulled out of service to attend to a multitude of illnesses and injuries, both with guests of the restaurant and the staff. Without further hesitation, I hit send on the computer and whisked across the dining room floor with the same determination and poise as my manager, and as expected of any of us working in one of the most famous high-end restaurants in the world. One of the back servers was closing the door as I approached. "Kamal, what's going on in there?" I whispered as my manager reached out for the door handle. "He has a problem, I think," Kamal responded with a shrug as he motioned towards the door and stepped out of the way. We walked into the bathroom to find an older gentleman sitting on the toilet. He was in his 70s and an obvious old New Yorker. He looked up at me and said, "Oh, hello there, darling. Good evening, sir. I am a server, but I am also an EMT. How can I help?" Still uncertain of what the problem was, I scanned the room for any props or indication of injury. "Be terrific. My hip seems to have fallen out of its socket," he said. Nod sigh. "Oh, wow, I'm sorry you hear that, sir." I couldn't help but be distracted by the fact that the gentleman's pants were down. I wasn't sure of what may or may not be in the toilet, and in the very back of my mind was the concern that my station was going up in flames. "I think you should just be able to put it back in. It's happened before, just slide it up." Okay. That's what's not happening, I thought. Though I had completed my EMT course, I was no orthopedist and definitely not prepared for this moment. "But first, if you wouldn't mind, could you give me a courtesy flush? Well, our toilets are automatic, so we'd have to pick you up a little to do it. And I don't think..." He slung his arm around my neck tightly and said, "Okay, steady now, lean me toward my good side." My manager poked his head in to let me know that he had called 911 just as we got off flush, and I lowered the gentleman back down on the seat. "Okay now," he directed, "lift the hip up, line it up, line it up good." I gingerly cupped his naked hip and lifted it to where I thought it should go, as if I were lifting a newborn up to be baptized. "You got it, that's the spot. Now just hold it there." Just then the door swung open and my manager entered carrying a dining room chair. In behind him followed an older man, also in his 70s, holding two martinis. "Well, Harold, now you've done it," he joked, while situating himself in the chair across from the man on the toilet. He handed Harold a martini. The two men sipped their martinis, talked about what they had been planning to eat for dinner, and rued how they had been waiting for a reservation. I continued to hold the hip in place, down on one knee, becoming an extension of the toilet, and faded into the background to the sound of the jovial bickering of those men. I was quickly jolted back from my gaze by the sound of sirens. Sirens! The paramedics had arrived, thank God. They entered the men's room with a controlled clamor of equipment. One of them quickly came over and took hold of the hip so I could step back. They thanked me, as did Harold, and I returned to my station. The captain I was working with came over to me, handed me a tray of silverware, and said, "Table 250 needs to be set up for dessert." thank you ever so much for having me. It has been an unprecedented pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dame. I know that that may have brought up some memories of some bad dates that you've had. That's probably an everyday occurrence for you, so I really appreciate your strength.
Anytime. It is with great sadness that I must now leave you, but it is time for my third nap of the day. Aren't you?
Thank you, Dame. Thank you, Jen. This is The Morning After. We'll be back with Kelly Farwell, The Water Table.
You're listening to Devil's Trail by Brothers on the heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Since the inception of the Heritage Turkey Project, more than 10 of Frank Reese's partner farms have converted to Good Shepherd from a corporate system whose weak protocols on husbandry, welfare, and genetics necessitated the use of subtherapeutic antibiotics at all stages of production. When Frank Reese started in 2002, he hatched 900 eggs in his barn. This year, 20,000 eggs were hatched. This is an enormous victory for sustainable agriculture and biodiversity. For more information and to order your Heritage Turkey today, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Well, here we are back on The Morning After in studio with Kelly Farwell. I'm very excited to hear about The Water Table, but I want to hear first kind of how you got your start and what has led you up to this point.
Okay.
Just a short summary, you know, of yeah. your whole life story.
Pretty much everything in a few sentences.
Should be easy.
Yeah, I mean, most of my work experience has been in the restaurant industry, and the bulk of that was in fine dining. The biggest stint being at Gramercy Tavern. I also worked at Kraft and a few casual places in Williamsburg, Dumont, Dressler, Rye. And then kind of feeling like I wanted to get back to my New England roots a little bit.
So you grew up in Maine?
I grew up in northern Maine, yep. And when I was a kid, I was like, it's so cold. Why do we live here? And now I'm like, it's so beautiful, quiet.
And then cold also? And
very cold. Yeah, it's very cold. So by taking the East River Ferry once, well, multiple times, we just were like, wow, the water's so awesome and being on a boat is so great. And we actually had... my girlfriend and I had our Shih Tzu in a tote bag taking the ferry, and the captain came out of the wheel. I was like, look at the dog in the bag.
Look at the dog in the bag.
It was really cute. And he came over and started talking to us a little bit. And then I was like, how did you get this job? Like, how do you become a captain? And mm-hmm. he kind of told me about his story a little bit. And then the next night, I mean, I was very, like, my wheels started turning. Like, wow, this could really, you know, take me back to my roots and, you know, be the next chapter. And the next night I went back to his same ferry and found mm-hmm. him again and spoke to him and said, you know, this seems really interesting and I'd maybe like to pursue it. And he's like, this is great. Like, we're going to make you a captain. We're going to do this. And I was like, okay, great. And we became fast friends and he's been a mentor and he really helped me through the licensing process and just kind of enter into the maritime industry. And
it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Had you spent any time on boats before, or was this like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a pretty lengthy process. Mm-hmm. Getting your license, it requires sea time and a course and chart plotting and, you know, there's different levels of licensing. So yeah, it's sort of like a lot of different elements that come together, but in the weird history of my life, I've been able to kind of pull that together and now I want to kind of join it with my hospitality industry experience and create this Brooklyn-based dinner boat.
So quick, before we go on to the dinner boat, can you just, I think your title is Master
Master Captain.
Master Captain.
Yeah.
Boating.
Yeah.
License. It's what a, what does that entitle you to drop to skipper?
Well, there are different the way that licenses break down. It's there are two elements. There's gross tonnage, which is the size of the boat, mm-hmm. and then there's the distance from the coast. So, okay. like my license is 100 gross ton.
Okay.
Which is sort of like the size of the East River Ferry.
Got it.
Just to give the scale. And then it goes up, I think, to 200 and then maybe 500.
For like freighters and...
Well, you need an unlimited for like the Staten Island Ferry or cruise ships.
Got
it. You have to be at it for a very long time to do that. And then you have different brackets as far as how far you can go. Like there's inland and then there's near coastal, which is like a certain amount of nautical miles off the coast. And then there's the high seas, which is you're going out in
cross
the
Atlantic.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
Is there also a specific license for ferrying people? I would imagine that you have to have a,
it's a commercial license.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can do, I think it's like, it's called a six pack where if you're taking up to six paying passengers, like that's a much easier license to get. And then you go up from there into doing commercial. I think it's like once you get past 12, where you have to actually have like a real commercial license. And yeah, it's pretty involved. I mean, there's the main thing is safety for people and, you know, being able to handle emergencies. And
well, and also based on the front of house story, you're also an EMT.
Correct.
Which yeah. probably gives you even more
credibility.
Yeah, I was going to say credibility as a captain because you can handle all sorts of emergencies.
I'm not afraid to be that person, I guess. And I think that's the main thing. Like I've had, Heimlich maneuvers. I mean, I feel like there are people where you watch and wait and hope there's someone in house that's going to take responsibility.
Sure, take
and
control.
Then, yeah, exactly. Because when you take control, you also become the responsible person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, I just feel like I have the spine for it. No, no, maybe it was growing up in a very rural, cold area, but you're just, you know, you can, I feel like I could handle that. So,
so then you got your license. Mm-hmm. So now you're a Captain Farwell.
Right. Correct.
And then at what point did the dinner boat idea come to life?
Well, actually it was in looking at different professions in the maritime industry and going into some of the transportation, like the ferry system or the water taxi, the commitment in hours and schedule for like the first 2 years were a little bit undoable for my situation. And I didn't, you know, like I got the license for a reason. So I really tried to brainstorm, like, what can I do with my skill set that's really different that I can dictate the hours and be in control of it. And then it was like, of course, you know, like I got some experience, some wheel time on dinner boats. And I just saw, I was like, wow, these aren't necessarily like the boats that I would go out on. You know, it's not like going out to a Brooklyn restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, why don't, you know, I do something like that? Like get something that's a little more intimate than the big booze cruisy boats or the, you know, power yachts and, renovated into an old New England tavern that's really kind of like coming here or some other Brooklyn restaurant that mm-hmm. just feels cozy and rustic and maybe serve New England food and craft beers and keep it really intimate and have it based out of Brooklyn.
And so you would be captain.
Correct.
You'd probably have to have, what do they call a co-captain?
First mate.
The best, mm-hmm. I think nautical terms are kind of some of the best terms.
Yeah.
So you'll have you'll be the captain, you'll have the first mate,
uh-huh.
then you'll have to have
crew.
Entire crew. So
yeah.
Do you have any seafaring friends or
I do.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. But I also
have
the
restaurant experience that you do.
Well, there are people out there that are already deckhands.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, for me, that would be the priority. And then you can teach them. You know, like, there are guys that work on the dinner boats that do both. Like, they're the crew, but they also help with the service and that sort of thing. So, in my mind, it's, you know, the boat that we're looking at is 53 feet. It's not
small. It's not big.
It's not a huge boat. So, I'm imagining a very, you know, small crew of people that have overlapping jobs. And it's supposed to just say getting paid what a deckhand gets paid, they would get that and maybe get tipped out. So it's worth it to them to do the extra and, you know, have one server, one bartender, and then two deckhands that overlap into some of the service aspect of it.
So you're anticipating a staff, like a front of house staff of four?
I think so.
Four to five.
I think that's realistic. Yeah.
And I mean, there. I'm just going through my head as a restaurant manager all of the like terrifying scenarios and the difficulty of service,
right?
In a moving vehicle, basically.
Correct. Yeah.
So how are you? I mean, I guess tell me the scenarios you've been thinking about and how you've been planning to combat those.
I think that in a way, like how restaurants dictate their clientele with music, like how that really is an indicator of who's going to want to come in and spend money. I think that this is going to be geared toward people that, let me just say, it's not going to look like a bomb went off on the boat when we get back.
Sure.
And
okay,
some,
got it.
Then
yeah.
on some dinner cruises where it's like a big party. Mm-hmm. And I don't anticipate that. I think four or five people as staff on a boat with 35 to 40 people a run is a really manageable number. And, you know, it's got a steel hull. It can absorb the rocking and rolling of the rivers. You know, the ferries really buzz. You know, they're great. They get you there so quickly. And they, you know, it's a small area. So there's a lot of motion in the water. And this particular boat, I think, would handle it really well. And, I mean, I just think, like, you just stay in control of the ship. Like, that's the main thing. Like, you set that precedent. And you don't, like any restaurant, when you see things starting to get out of control, you can't let them go. Like, especially on a boat. And for me, that gives you a little more liberty to get involved sooner than just standing in the corner behind a curtain and hoping that they figure it out and calm down. but you can, you know, get involved and just say, listen, we're on a boat. We can't do that.
Well, and I guess, like, for me, I'm just thinking about, like, choppy water and, like, glasses falling. But, I mean, that can't be how...
It's not really what happens out there.
I mean, exactly. Not what happens out there.
So you mentioned the steel hull, and the boat that you're going to refurbish is a tugboat, correct?
Well, it's a commercial passenger vessel that's been custom built to look like a tugboat.
Okay.
Because actual tugboats are industrial vessels, and they're not certified by the Coast Guard generally to carry passengers. They're like utility vehicles. So it's hard to find a boat like that. But I want that rustic kind of aesthetic. And then when I saw this boat, it's been an old tour boat out on Lake Michigan. It just seemed like the perfect boat. I mean, it would be great if it were a tiny bit bigger, but that's okay. Like, we can
start in one place and hopefully build from there. So what is the menu that you're thinking?
We're thinking like New England based food, lobster rolls, oysters on the half shell, chowder, kind of New England comfort food. Very, very basic, especially starting out, you know, and just, you know, we have to figure out the sort of kitchen aspect. It's not a big boat, so we're really thinking about how to get the food in some sort of pattern, whether it's like catering through a restaurant and then picking it up every morning, that sort of thing. Or if it's like raw bar stuff, you can do that right on board. So it's sort of working those details out. And luckily, you know, my friend... Captain Paul Spreiser, who's the gentleman that helped me with my license, he'll be helping to consult on it. And I have Sue, my girlfriend, who's done all of the graphic design and some of the concept development. It's been really helpful, too. So she's my current first mate.
Oh, I love it. That's adorable. Amazing. So I guess another problem that may arise is seasonality. Like, you know, can you be out on the boat in all seasons?
You can. In the dinner boat industry, they stay pretty busy through the holidays. You have a lot of like Christmas, New Year's. The rivers really don't freeze. You might get little ice chunks sometimes, but I mean, the ferry can bust through them, and they're fiberglass boats. So a steel hull will have no problem. Yeah. And there's a pretty big cabin for indoor seating. And then there's a back end of the boat that has a structure built around it that I'm contemplating sort of glassing in. So you're sort of indoor outdoor.
Okay.
So maybe we would lose like, you know, 10 people due to not having outdoor seating during the colder months. But we would still be able to keep it running. And I've sort of in the 3-year business plan, develop the seasonality of trips and the ebb and flow of it. But the plan is just to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. And in fair weather, will there be seating on deck?
Oh, yeah. There are already benches that are out.
Excellent.
Yeah, on the bow and in the stern. And we would just build that out and put tables. Just really basic, minimal, but rustic and, you know.
So how close are you? How close are you to your goal?
Well, in my mind, we're very close. In reality, we have a little ways to go.
Sure.
The vote is a pretty reasonable price. We're doing an Indiegogo campaign that we've crossed over 15,000.
Great.
Yeah, and we have 19 days left. So we're trying to gather as much as we can. And then we're going out to Lake Michigan next weekend to mm-hmm. take measurements of the boat. And then, you know, if we can get it, the plan would be in March to drive it back through the Great Lakes and come down the Hudson into New York Harbor. It'd be like a 9-day trip.
That sounds amazing.
Good yeah. way to spend a week.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. It would be a real adventure.
So where can people go to donate to your project?
The website is www.indiegogo.com/thewatertable, all okay. one word.
Okay, so everyone who's listening right now, go donate. We've got to make this happen. Do you have outside investors that are not involved in the Indiegogo campaign?
There are conversations happening. Nothing is in writing, but mm-hmm. there's interest and a lot of exciting interest. But I'm trying to approach this like, I always say it's dangerous to count on money you don't have.
Absolutely.
So I'm looking at it like the money that we have is what we have. And, you know, if the outside investments come in, then great. We can build it out sooner than if we're piecing it together mm-hmm. over the next, you know, year or so.
Well, it's an amazing idea. And you know, when I think of dinner cruises, I do think of like a place I don't want to eat.
Cheesy.
People I don't want to hang out with.
Right.
And something big, boisterous, like bursting at the seams.
Yep.
Exactly. And it's like cruisy, weird kinda. Light, like Christmas lights all over the place.
Yeah. Strobes.
Right.
Sure. Everything. I'm feeling nauseous just thinking about it. But yeah, what you're doing sounds like something that so many people in the city would absolutely love to spend their evening doing.
We hope so. I mean, I've put a lot of time into restaurants, and I mean, when you spend, you know, a good 15 years watching people eat, you really get to know what people want. And, you know, especially working in Brooklyn the last few years, like, you really have a sense of, okay, this people want to feel like they're in their own home, but they have really good quality food. And there's, you know, some sort of, not theme, I don't like that word, but some sort of focus on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to make it accessible, to make it on your list, like, oh, where do you want to eat tonight? Not like it's a special occasion. We got to, like, figure out how to get to the boat. It's like, I want to be able to, as the city's building the waterfront up, which they're doing, especially in North Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
would be to find a pier that we could pick up and drop off that's local for everybody.
And do you anticipate just doing one turn, one dinner turn? Two turns.
Yeah, and early and a later seating. And then on the weekends, we would do brunch during the day. And then depending how business goes, definitely by year two, we'll be doing summer Fridays, doing like champagne lunches
mm-hmm.
During the day. And ultimately, you know, we want to be out during the day and the night. Like, we just want the boat to be running. So, yeah, if the business is there sooner, great. You know, more trips.
Yes. I have a random question about sort of the health department and how they would consider you. Obviously, you're a restaurant, so they're yeah. going to consider you, but mm-hmm. does the fact that you are like seafaring have any difference in terms of jurisdiction and how you are?
You could run away from them really exactly. easily.
You could outrun them. I think that, I mean, I have to really kind of look into the actual logistics of it, but I know that technically, once you're on the boat and you're the captain, the only people I think that legally can board the boat are the Coast Guard and the Navy. It's not to say they couldn't get on there as like a customer, and I'm sure knowing the health department, they would find a way.
Absolutely.
You know? So yeah, I mean, there are still logistics like that to work out, but the good thing is even if they can get on, It's a small vessel in a contained space, and just for safety issues, you have to run a very tight ship. So
absolutely,
I'm not super concerned about it.
That saying doesn't exist for no reason.
Full circle.
Amazing. Well, we're going to take a break here on The Morning After. We're going to come back with everyone's favorite segment, What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's.
Chardonnay's.
Suitcase in your hand.
You're listening to Coyotes by Brothers on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
We're back on The Morning After. Before we get to Chardonnay's, at the break, we were just having a conversation about how this is just more than a restaurant on the water. And Sue Walsh, first mate to Kelly Farwell, captain, master captain.
Soon to be wife.
Congratulations.
Again,
we're actually getting married on a boat.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's no halfway about it.
Yeah. Full speed ahead.
Oh my God. Amazing. Well, you know what they say. Anyway, so we were talking about you know, how water surrounds New York, and go ahead and continue on what we were talking about.
When the ferry started, the ferry service started in, I think, June of last year, some friends of mine were like, you have to take the ferry, and it's really close to my office, and it's also close to our house. So I was like, oh, I guess so, but it's $4 versus the unlimited MetroCard, and then I took it, and I realized there's no going back. And as New Yorkers, you know, you take the train everywhere. You don't really see the water as part of the city. And I am so lucky that every day I get to take two ferry rides and experience the calm of the water. And you're away from the sort of chaos of the city and all these adjectives that people describe New York as, frenzied, whatever. And you have this peaceful moment. And this is the nature of New York, the actual, like, natural waterway environment. And so I think this project is really also aimed at bringing that more, you know, closer to true New Yorkers. And you're not just going to go on the Circle Line cruise with your family to see the Statue of Liberty. You're not just going to see it as foreign barges with, like, what is even going on?
Garbage or something.
Yeah, like garbage.
Gravel. Being,
gravel. Whatever. Who even knows? So we're really hoping just to bring the waterways closer to New Yorkers and make it something that you really want to go to.
I think that, I mean, I think there's something totally valid about this idea that being on a boat is, you're able to let go of things in a way that you can't let go anywhere else.
It's pretty amazing, too.
Yep, it's like as soon as you're on the water, the motion of the boat takes over, you realize you're not on land anymore, you realize you're not going to get back on land until you actually hit your destination.
Right. Yep.
And there, you know, even though, so there's a captain, there's a course, you know where you're going, but there's still the element that you're fighting with the water, you're fighting with the wind,
right.
And those things are going to have their way with you. And once you're in it, you're there until you dock.
Yep. Yeah, and it's just such an amazing way to see the city and experience the city that isn't that accessible unless you're a commuter on the East River Ferry or Staten Island Ferry, and or on one of these huge dinner boats with cantaloupe platters and fanned napkins.
We hope we won't see those.
We will not. That's
maybe,
we're hoping
Chardonnays
to do.
Should do.
Chardonnay. We're doing the opposite.
I actually think that you just described the Chardonnay's dinner boat. What's on the menu with Chardonnays? Chardonnays goes nautical.
Absolutely. We should, once you're up and running, once you've been reviewed, maybe Chardonnays could take over for a night.
Oh, for sure.
It could be a theme. I mean, we could make New England comfort food awful by Chardonnays.
You know, I would be thrilled. What's on the menu
with Chardonnays? But it means awful in a good way. That's the point of...
It's everything we love about bad taste.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, cantaloupe platters, fan napkins, strawberry daiquiris, 100% plastic, all plastic glassware. Oh, yeah. Maybe the bottom
comes
off,
kind of glassware
you
don't know where you would even buy it. You don't know where it came from.
And how does it get to be called glassware? Like Chinette. Isn't it called like Chinette or
Chinette?
Like something awful like that.
Absolutely.
So in, you know, our Chardonnays is our fantasy restaurant that celebrates all bad food and wine trends. And Elizabeth has really taken Chardonnays to the next level, and that being decor. And the decor of Chardonnays, but there's also in her mind...
Chardonnays to me represents really just sort of it's the tip of the iceberg for an entire lifestyle of just sort of, you know, flyover state taste. You know, I can say this because
I just lost that listenership.
Sorry, guys. I'm one of you. I come from Central Illinois. I grew up in small towns on the prairie. To me, Chardonnay's lifestyle, like the home edition, the lifestyle edition, is something that it's sort of the iconography of my childhood. Once again, you know, like these four-poster beds with canopies and frilled bed skirts. And I think about my dear aunt's house, I love her to death, but on the walls of their den are words like family and love stenciled and hand-painted alongside of cows and chickens, which... They raise cows and chickens, used to raise chickens, so it's not that far-fetched, and family is in love. It's all good. But how does that sort of translate back into Chardonnays?
Well, I think Chardonnays has stencil. What's on the menu at Chardonnays? Exactly. What's on the wall at Chardonnays is some sense stencil of, like, bistro, cabernet... like bouillabaisse, something like French, and they have no French food except fries.
French fries. You know, like the still lifes stenciled with wine paraphernalia. So grapes.
Well, and those like, those old like wine posters that are like replicas of old wine posters. And
Big straw Chianti bottle.
That is definitely there. And there might be some candle actually in the top of it.
We
with
could
wax.
Only hope.
There's probably
scented candles.
I mean, the decor goes on and on. I'm thinking like plasticky pleather booths.
Absolutely.
And it's strangely modern in an ugly, awful.
Well, I think it's just also a bit hodgepodge. I'm seeing sort of white pine.
Oh, it can be anything.
Chairs with, tufted gingham cushions that have ruffles all around the outside of them and tied to the back of the chairs.
It's like indoor, outdoor.
Exactly.
Wow, you've just touched on a whole other level of Chardonnay's decor, indoor, outdoor. So I grew up in Phoenix where we always had the Arizona room, which was like this... I mean, everyone probably has like a screen porch, but it's like a screened in room where maybe there's like, what's that? Oh, what's it called? Turf.
AstroTurf
yeah. on the ground. And everything's pastel. There's like a wooden white pine coyote.
Absolutely.
That has like a bandana with like blue and pink, like Navajo things. I mean, I'm just thinking of the Southwestern version of Chardonnays at this moment. But I really do like this indoor-outdoor idea.
I mean, why couldn't it be a regional franchise? Every state has its own.
I think it could really hit the mobile home community with this. I was just thinking the AstroTurf. I did have a brief job spray painting mobile homes when I was 19.
Was it legal or what was it?
I don't know. I got hired in a parking lot.
And you put your initials on the side or?
something like that. But there was a lot of AstroTurf. And there was a lot of brown ceilings from the cigarette smoke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's definitely going to be some, like, cross-stitched, you know, scenes of, like, bunnies and deer, maybe. Yeah. You know, whatever's in season. If there's venison on the menu, you'll put up the cross-stitched deer scene from the forest. And if you're...
Well, and definitely carpet.
Right.
Definitely carpet.
Oh, wall to wall.
There is no, I mean, it makes no sense. I have zero clue as to why anyone would have ever put carpet in a restaurant.
Yeah.
I mean, recently I was in Huntington Beach, California, and I went to this amazing restaurant called Catch of the Day, and everyone should go because it is totally Chardonnay's, the nautical Southern California version with carpet.
Wow.
But actually an incredible wine list, so I can't really call them Chardonnays because they had it going on for sure. No, for sure.
That's good.
Price point was on point. So, Kelly, tell us where we can go to donate again.
It's www.indiegogo.com/thewatertable, all one word.
Keeping my fingers crossed for you.
Thank you. And thank you. I mean, there's already been so much generosity. It's fantastic. And I really do think of it as like a community project because it's for everybody. It's, you know.
Absolutely.
It's for New
Yorkers.
Yeah, it's for New Yorkers that, you know, it's a good way to love the city again when you can't get out of town.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's like a mini escape. Yeah.
I hope we can get a reservation.
Oh,
I hope.
Super VIP.
I hope. I'm going to put my life jacket on as soon as we walk out the door just with my fingers crossed.
Just ready.
Just ready to go.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me, Elizabeth.
Thanks for having me.
It's always amazing to see you. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.